Welcome to Induction Vault, a production of iHeartRadio and the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
We're getting ready to start. So if everybody else could sit down, stop schmoozing. Please take your seats. We're going to get started.
It's no surprise that the best singer-songwriters can also have a knack for the spoken word. And the two inductees you'll hear in this episode are no exception. In fact, Bruce Springsteen and Bono just might be two of rock and roll's greatest orators. In his induction of Bruce, Bono offers a poetic and gutsy monologue of epic proportions that's perfectly suited for his good friend and hero. Bono recounts all the new and exciting elements that Bruce brought to music in the 70s, reciting lyrics to many of Bruce's classic songs and taking us on a fast ride through a wide range of pop culture references. Bruce's acceptance of his award is humble, thoughtful, and touching, with expressions of thanks to his beloved mother, words of appreciation for his longtime manager and 2020 inductee John Landau, and sometimes emotional words of recognition and respect for all the members of the E Street Band who he invites to join him on stage.
Yeah, man. Bruce is a very unusual rock star, isn't he, really? I mean, he hasn't done the things most rock stars do. He got rich and famous, but he never embarrassed himself with all that success, did he? No drug busts, no blood changes in Switzerland. Even more remarkable, no golfing. No bad hair, period, even in the 80s. No wearing of dresses in videos. Though there was those fingerless gloves in the 80s. No embarrassing movie roles, no pet snakes, no monkeys. No exhibitions of his own paintings. No public brawling or setting himself on fire on the weekend. Rock stars are supposed to make soap operas of their lives, aren't they? If they don't kill themselves first. Well, you can't be a big legend and not be dysfunctional. It's not allowed. You should at least have lost your looks. Everyone else has. Do you see them? It's like Madame Tussauds back there. Then there's Bruce Springsteen. Okay. Oh! Handsome mother with those brooding brown eyes, eyes that could see through America. And a catastrophe of great songs if you were another songwriter. Bruce has played every bar in the USA and every stadium. Credibility. You couldn't have more unless you were dead. But Bruce Springsteen, you always knew, was not going to die stupid. He didn't buy the mythology that screwed so many people. Instead, he created an alternate mythology, one where ordinary lives became extraordinary and heroic. Bruce Springsteen feels familiar to us, but it's not an easy familiarity, is it? Even his band seemed to stand taller when he walks in the room. It's complex. He's America's writer and critic. It's like in Badlands, he's Martin Sheen and Terrence Malick. To be so accessible and so private, there's a rubric. But then again, he is an Irish Italian with a Jewish sounding name. You know? What more do you want? Add one big African sax player and no one in this room is going to fuck with you.
No.
No. Yeah. In 1974, I was 14. Even I knew the 60s were over. It was the era of soft rock and fusion. The Beatles were gone. Elvis was in Vegas. What was going on? Nothing was going on. Bruce Springsteen was coming on, saving music from the phonies, saving lyrics from the folkies, saving black leather jackets from the fawns. Oh, the greasers, they tramp the streets or get busted for sleeping on the beaches all night. And them boys in their high heels, oh, Sandy, their skins are so white. Oh, Sandy, love me tonight, and I promise I'll love you forever. In Dublin, Ireland, I knew what he was talking about. Here was a dude who carried himself like Brando, Dylan, and Elvis. If John Steinbeck could sing, if Van Morrison could ride a Harley Davidson. But he was something new, too. He was the first whiff of Scorsese, the first hint of Patti Smith, Elvis Costello, and The Clash. He was the end of long hair, brown rice, and bell bottoms. He was the end of the 20-minute drum solo. It was good night, Haight Ashbury. Hello, Asbury Park.
Come on! Come on!
Wow. America was staggering when Springsteen appeared. The president had just resigned in disgrace. The U.S. had lost its first war. There was going to be no more oil in the ground. The days of cruising and big cars were supposed to be over. But Bruce Springsteen's vision was bigger than Honda. It was bigger than a Subaru. Bruce made you believe that dreams were still out there, but after loss and defeat, they had to be braver, not just bigger. He was singing, "Now you're scared and you're thinking that maybe we ain't that young anymore." Because it took guts to be romantic now. Knowing you could lose didn't mean you still didn't take the ride. In fact, it made taking the ride all the more important. So, here was a new vision and a new community. More than a community, because every great rock group is kind of like starting a religion, sort of. And Bruce surrounded himself with fellow believers. The E Street wasn't just a great rock group or a street gang. It was a brotherhood. Zealots like Steve Van Zandt. The Bishop Clarence Clemens. The Holy Roy Bittan. Crusaders Danny Federici, Max Weinberg, Gary Tallent, and later Niels Lofgren. And John Landau. What do you call a man who makes his best friend his manager, his producer, his confessor? You call him the boss. And Springsteen didn't just marry a gorgeous red-headed woman from the Jersey Shore. She could sing, she could write, and she could tell the boss off. And that's Patty right there, I think. For me and the rest of the U-Tours, it wasn't just the way he described the world, it was the way he negotiated it. Here was a map, a book of instructions on how to be in the business, but not of it. Generous is a word you could use to describe the way he treated us. Decency is another, but these words can box you in. I remember when Bruce was headlining Amnesty International's tour for Prisoners of Conscience, I remember thinking, wow, if ever there was a prisoner of conscience, it's Bruce Springsteen. Integrity can be a yoke, a pain in the ass. When your songs are taking you to a part of town, people don't expect to see you. At some point, I remember riding an elevator with Gentleman Bruce, where he just stared straight ahead of himself, completely ignored me. I was crushed. Only when he walked into the doors as they were opening did I realize the impossible was happening. My God, Bruce Springsteen, the Buddha of my youth, is plastered. Drunk as a skunk, pissed as a fart. I had to go back to the book of instructions and scratch the bit out about how you held yourself in public. By the way, that was, on a personal note, a great relief. Something was going on, though. As a fan, I could see that My hero was beginning to rebel against his own public image. Things got even more interesting on Tunnel of Love when he started to deface it. A remarkable bunch of tunes, where our leader starts having a go at himself and the hypocrisy of his own heart before anyone else could. But the tabloids could never break news on Bruce Springsteen, because as fans, he'd already told us everything in the songs. We knew he was spinning. We could feel him free-falling. But it wasn't in chaos or entropy. It was in love. They call him the boss. Well, that's a bunch of crap. He's not the boss. He works for us. More than a boss, he's the owner. Because more than anyone else, Bruce Springsteen owns America's heart. I'm proud to introduce to you Bruce Springsteen, member of the E Street Band. Come on!
We'll be back with Bruce Springsteen's acceptance speech on the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame Induction Vault.
Thank you. Thanks. Well, should remember you always want an Irishman to give your induction speech. I knew I always liked you, Bono. You were scaring me a little bit there, though. No, it wasn't that good. But I like the part about my good looks the best. But anyway, I guess let me warn you, the records took 2 years, the show's 3 hours, so the speech may take a little while. But I stood on this stage and I inducted Roy Orbison and Creedence Clearwater Revival and Bob Dylan artists whose music was a critical part of my own life. And tonight I hope that my music served my audience half as well. If I've succeeded, thanks. If I've succeeded in doing that, it's been with the help of many, many kindred spirits along the way. I'd like to thank my mother, Adele, for that slushy Christmas Eve. So for that Christmas Eve, a night like the one outside when we stood outside the music store and I pointed to the Sunburst guitar and she had that $60 and I said, I need that one, you know. She got me what I needed, and she protected me and provided for me on 1,000 other days and nights. So, as importantly, she gave me a sense of work as something that was joyous and that filled you with pride and self-regard and that committed you to your world. Thanks, Mom. This is yours tonight. Take it home as a small return on the investment you made in your son. So... Mamma, the Italian side of the family, Mamma. You know? Now my dad, he passed away this year, but I gotta thank him because what would I conceivably have written about without him? You know? I mean, you gotta imagine if everything had gone great between us, it would have been a disaster, you know? I would have written just happy songs, and I tried that in the early 90s, and it didn't work. The public didn't like it. He never said much about my music, except that his favorite songs were the ones about him, and that was enough, you know? Anyway, I put on his work clothes, and I went to work. It was the way that I honored him. My parents' experience forged my own. They shaped my politics, and they alerted me to what is at stake when you're born in the USA. I miss you, Dad. A lot of other people. Marion and Tex Vineyard, they took me under the wing when I was 15. They opened up their home to a bunch of rock and roll misfits and let us make a lot of noise and practice all night long. Thanks, Marion.
Carl Tinker West, another one of my early managers whose support I couldn't have done without. He introduced me to Mike Appel, and Mike kicked the doors down when they needed kicking, and I consider him my friend. I want to say, Mike, thanks for everything. Well, mostly everything. And and thanks for being my guest here tonight. I'm glad you're here with me. Anyway, Mike introduced me to the world of Columbia Records, which has been my home for the past 25 years. From early days with John Hammond and Clive Davis to the high rolling times with Walter Yetnikoff and Al Teller, to the present with my friends Tommy Mottola and Donny Einar, they created a conduit for a lifetime of thoughts and ideas, a place where I was I felt safe and supported and encouraged to do my best and my truest work. You know, I've heard enough record company horror stories right from this stage to realize, to appreciate the fact that I don't have one. And for that, I got to thank all the men and women at Columbia Records around the world, past and present. Thank you very much for your efforts. I got to thank my co-producer Chuck Plock and engineer Toby Scott for their sustained contribution to my recorded work. They remained in the saddle as often years went by, wondering if we'd ever get the music out or if they'd ever get a royalty check. They kept their cool and their creativity. Of course, they're basket cases now. But we remain friends and great working partners. And no mention of my records would be complete without Bob Clear Mountain, the great mixer, who helped me bring my music to a larger audience. I want to thank my tour director, George Travis, and the great crews he's assembled on the road over the years. Thank you, George. I want to thank my agent, Barry Bell, and Frank Barcelona for a great job. All right. Thank you. Now, the lawyers. Got to thank them, you know. Peter Parcher and Steve Hayes, they protected me and my music for 22 years. I appreciate it. This next one's a little tough one. Alan Grubman and Artie Andersky, names familiar to many in this room. They're the money men. How can I put this? These are great and complicated and misunderstood Americans. They're men that are entrusted with a very, very important task. And for, you know, folks on the money man goes to the record company and he's in charge of bringing back the pink Cadillac. Now when Alan and Artie go, they bring back the pink Cadillac, the blue Cadillac, the red Cadillac, the yellow Cadillac, the pink Cadillac with the white walls. But then they take the blue Cadillac. And they take the hubcaps off the yellow Cadillac. But that still leaves you with a few Cadillacs. And they make sure that neither you, nor themselves, of course, are going to be broke when you're riding in the black Cadillac. So they do that well. I gotta thank Barbara Carr for her love and loyalty and dedication. Couldn't get along without you, Barb. My friend Dave Marsh, thank you so much. And the next guy, yeah, this is John Landau, or as I sometimes call him, John, thank God I'm a country boy Landau. I've seen the future of rock and roll management, and its name is John Landau. I got held him to return the favor there, but that quote was managing. It was a mite burdensome for me, but as he often said, that's your job. But John's given me something beyond friendship and beyond guidance: his intelligence, his sense of the truth, his recognition of my intelligence. We were worlds that collided. His creative ability as a producer, an editor, speechwriter earlier this evening, his ability to see through to the heart of matters both professional and personal, and the love that he's given me has altered my life forever. What I hope to give to my fans with my music, a greater sense of themselves and greater freedoms. He, with his talents and his abilities, has done that for me. There's no thank you tonight that's going to do the job, and it's a debt that I can't repay, and one that I treasure owing. Thank you, Johnny. I love you. I also want to thank Barbara Landau and Kate and Charlie for sharing John with me over the years. I know it hasn't been easy. Now, last but not least, the men and women, the mighty men and women of the E Street Band. Oh, Lord. Who I have re-educated and rededicated, reanimated, resuscitated, and reinvigorated with the power, the magic, the mystery, the ministry of rock and roll. Vinny Lopez, Boone Carter, early drummers of the band, Davey Sanchez, Nils Lofgren, the most overqualified second guitarist in show business. He plays 10 times better than me, and he still wanders over to hear my solos when I play. I guess he's checking to see if I'm getting any better. Danny Federici, the most instinctive and natural musician I ever met. An only member of the band that can reduce me to a shouting mess. I love you, Danny. Your organ and accordion playing brought the boardwalks of Central and South Jersey alive in my music. Thank you. Gary Talent, Southern man, my lovely friend. Great bass player, rock and roll aficionado, whose quiet and dignity graced my band and my life. Thank you, Gary. Roy Bittan. Roy's playing formed the signature sound of some of my greatest records. He can play anything. He's always there for me. His emotional generosity and his deep personal support mean a great, great deal to me. Thank you, Roy. Max Weinberg, Mighty Max, star of the Conan O'Brien show. Conan ain't too bad either. But Max found a place where Bernard Purdy, Buddy Rich, and Keith Moon intersected, and he made it his own. I ask, and he delivers for me night after night. Thank you, Max. Stevie Van Zandt. For those of you who've seen The Sopranos and are worried that's what Steve is like, that's what he's like. So he's a lifetime of rock and roll friendship. We did it all, you know. Great songwriter, producer, great guitarist. We haven't played together in 15 years, and if it's up to me, that'll never happen again. I love you, Steve. Whoa. Patty Scalfa, she busted the boys club big time. Whoa, it went like this. Okay, fellas, there's gonna be a woman in the band. We need someone to sing all the high parts. How complicated can it get? A nice paparazzi photo of me in my jockey shorts on a balcony in Rome. 10 of the best years of my life. Evan, Jesse, and Sam, 3 children genealogically linked to the E Street Band, tells the rest of the story. Everybody wants to know how I feel about the band. Hell, I married one of them. You know? Thank you, baby. You hit all the high notes. You're tougher than the rest. Oh, now, last but not least, Clarence Clemons. That's right. You want to be like him, but you can't. You know, the night I met Clarence, he got up on stage A sound came out of his horn that it seemed to rattle the glasses behind the bar and threatened to blow out the back wall. The door literally blew off the club in a storm that night, and I knew I'd found my sax player. But there was something else, you know, something happened when we stood side by side. Some energy, some unspoken story. For 15 years, Clarence has been a source of myth and light and enormous strength for me on stage. He has filled my heart so many nights. And I love it when he wraps me in those arms at the end of the night. That night we first stood together, I looked over at sea and it looked like his head reached into the clouds, and I felt like a mere mortal scurrying upon the earth, you know. But he always lifted me up, way, way, way up. Together we told a story of the possibilities of friendship, a story older than the ones that I was writing, and a story that I could never have told without him at my side. I want to thank you, big man. I love you so much. So, as Stevie Van Zandt says, rock and roll, it's a band thing. And that includes you, the audience. Thank you for giving me access and entrance into your lives, and I hope that I've been a good companion. So, but right now, my wife, my great friends, my great collaborators, my great band, your presence tonight honors me, and I wouldn't be standing up here tonight without you, and I can't stand up here now without you. Please join me. Oh, Johnny, you too.
Thanks for joining us on this week's episode of Rock and Roll Hall of Fame Induction Vault. For more on your favorite inductees, to shop inductee merch, or to plan your trip to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, visit rockhall.com. Plus, view the 2020 Rock and Roll Hall of Fame Induction Special on demand on HBO Max. Our executive producers are Noel Brown, Shelby Morrison, and Risa Gerke. Supervising producer is Taylor Chacoin. Research and archival assistance from Isabel Kiefer and Shannon Erb. Thanks again for joining us on this week's episode of Rock and Roll Hall of Fame Induction Vault. Induction Vault is a production of iHeartRadio and the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.